This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Mike Schoke and the Bulldog.
How many bees is a swarm? Is two a swarm or three? Whatever. How many does it have to be?
And it'd be like seven.
It's Mike Schoke.
How many times do you have to be stung to have been swarmed? And I was like, dude, I got swarmed. I got stung only once, but I was swarmed.
And the Bulldog.
You insist you were swarmed.
There were bees, man. Like, plural. Big, lots of S's. Lots of E's and S. Bees. that was not
bees.
Fun.
Bees.
Right. That was not fun.
On WGR.
Hey, man, that kind of hurt.
Sports Radio 550.
Late in the afternoon on a Friday, 2:30, I go, yeah, I do want the coffee. I mean, it's never a big crowd in here, but on a late Friday, you know, it's almost
pretty chill.
Pretty thin, you know?
Yeah.
But I went ahead and did it. Somebody, I'll do this too. You're walking out. And you turn the coffee maker off, so you make sure it's not just on all weekend.
Right.
Somebody had done that by like 3:30, and it's full. I mean, one half a cup for me.
Wow. Yeah.
I just like, I feel like I have a responsibility to drink. I'm saying 3 cups, because I made it. You know, or else I'm just dumping out the entire pot almost. That's probably as much as I could possibly drink. So we're in the middle of that, folks. You're tuning in the middle of that.
Oh, how exciting.
Experience.
What a great time for you to turn the radio on.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, DJs are up on billboards.
Really got lucky here, folks.
This is mine. it's starting to feel very yachty in here. Joining us on the West Shore Hotline, Mark Schofield. I'm sorry we didn't have a more appropriate, you know, like a Rupert Holmes to play you in with.
Oh, no. Hey, the silent play-in is just as good, guys. Always great to be with you. I will say, though, I was just in the car. And I heard a little Maggot and Steel, so I felt appropriate for the afternoon. A little Maggot and Steel right before I was hopping off with you five gentlemen.
One of the not quite a Mount Rushmore yacht rock song, but
not a Mount Rushmore.
No.
But it's like one of those like other sort of, you know, monuments that you want to see. It's not on the top of the list. It's certainly not a Mount Rushmore.
No.
Type of thing, but you do want to see it once, right?
Yes. I think the modern phrase for this is the real ones know, Mark. The real ones know.
The real ones know. The OGs know.
That's right.
It's just a scenic overlook.
That's right.
That's right. Overlook of yacht rock.
Look at where we've gotten to already. Amazing. Okay, Mark. So these Bills have been pretty hot. Super Bowl favorite and all. Now they get the Dolphins. I don't know. You want to say something first about sort of what they look like to you, Allen on down? I mean, close to perfection so far.
I mean, when you beat in successive weeks. Now, I know last year a lot of people looked at the Titans as kind of, I don't know if they're really the best team in the AFC, even though they were the number one overall seed. But when you beat the Super Bowl champions in week one, the defending number one overall seed in the AFC in week two by a combined score of 72-17, I think you're doing something right as a team. And that's certainly where the Buffalo Bills are right now. And yes, it starts with Allen. And I wrote this week, look, I don't know how you defend this team. You know, cover two, cover four, quarters, cover one, cover three. It doesn't matter. They right now have an answer for everything. And then, of course, it starts with Allen, his ability to make throws against any coverage. If you're going to play with these two deep safety looks that we've seen sometimes, so he's perfectly comfortable. I'll take the underneath stuff. because I know at some point you're going to get impatient as a defense. You're going to bring that second safety down, and then I'm going to hit some of the shot plays to the outside, and that's what we saw. And then in both games, the ability to get up on opponents plays right into what they have on the defensive side of the ball. Von Miller, Gregory Rousseau, they can pin their ears back, get after the quarterback, create some turnovers, create some splash plays on the defensive side of the ball. And then you have everybody turning the game off on Monday night around 9:45 Eastern or so, because there wasn't much left to tune in for. And so that's what they're doing right now. Now, this week presents a different new challenge. But right now, after the first 2 weeks, it's hard to say that, look, they're not the Super Bowl favorites the way they've started the year.
We'll get to the challenge that Miami may represent, but a little more on you know, how difficult it is to defend them now. It feels to me, maybe a way to put this, Mark, is that Allen's head, his intelligence, football IQ, whatever, recognition, has sort of caught up to his physical gifts now, because we're seeing and hearing him get credit. I think in the opener, Collinsworth said, "I feel like I'm watching Brady," at one point. And you heard it again after the Monday night game, that he's just so ready. As soon as both teams in both games came out of the two high look, over the top 50 yards, bang. Like, he's just right there. Like, the recognition, and it's not to say that he wasn't, tactically intelligent the first few years of his career, but I feel like there's another level we're seeing here.
I think that's exactly right. And I think the best way I can sort of frame this is, I remember going into last year, you know, when people would ask me, what do you want to see from Josh Allen this year in terms of the development? I said, look, I want to see him adjust to the adjustments faster than, say, needing two or three games to figure out what teams are doing. And what we saw last year was, yeah, now it's like more drive to drive. If a defense shows him a different look, you know, he gets with Brian Daboll last year, they sort of figure it out, and then, okay, now we know what we're going to do the next drive. Now it's play to play. Sometimes even pre-snap to post-snap, where it's, oh, pre-snap, they're showing me quarters, they're showing me cover two, they're showing me this coverage in the secondary. Oh, I'm taking the snap, they're rotating it. Okay, I'll go to the boundary. I'll throw a back shoulder to Stephon Diggs. I'll go over the top to Jake Crumrow, because they spot it to single high, and I can hit them now on that boundary nine ball along the left sideline for a huge gain. It's not a week-to-week. It's not a drive-to-drive. It's a snap-to-finish job that he's doing right now in terms of breaking defenses down with his mind. And it does show the overall growth and development of Josh Allen, where, like you said, the physical tools were there. It was always filling in the rest of the play in the quarterback position that he had to do. He's been doing it since basically the middle to end of his rookie year, but he's gotten so much better at it, where you add in the fact he can break defenses down with his mind as well as his arm and his legs, it makes him so tough to defend.
Mark Schofield, now with SB Nation, joining us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. You mentioned his legs there. Continues to just, I don't know how you really measure this, but he ended up with one run in the game Monday night, and it was on the first drive, 10 yards on a 3rd and 9, and there's a spin and a hurdle and 2 broken tackles. Like, it's just so hard to get this team to fourth down, Mark. And that's a big part of it.
It's a huge part of it. And the thing about that play is, it's cover two man underneath. And so you've got the two deep safeties. Tennessee decides, look, we're going to try to play man coverage. It's 3rd and 9. The problem with playing man coverage against a quarterback like Josh Allen is, the second he sees those corners and their backs are turned to him, and he sees that flash of grass to the left side, he can take it and go. And so you do everything you can on first and second down to get him into 3rd and long. You think, okay, we're going to keep 2 deep safeties to protect against the big play. We're going to play man coverage underneath. We're going to be okay. In the blink of an eye, now it's 1st and 10 on the opening drive of the game. That is so demoralizing for a defense, but that's what he can do. And then the next 3rd and long, it's the same thing. They decide, okay, we're going to roll the dice one more time. We'll play cover 2 man underneath. We'll keep the safeties up over the top. We're going to man this up. And he has the post shot in the middle of the field, Jay Crumrow, and he decides, no, waits on it, throws the in cut. Again, breaking teams down with his mind because he sees a defender slip and he hits that outside route that's breaking to the inside. His ability to beat you in a multitude of ways, it makes it so hard to defend. And he doesn't have to run the ball a ton, but you start thinking, oh, man, we got to account for his legs. Maybe we bring that safety down, and it gets us back to that, okay, now they're in single high, now I'm going to hit you deep.
So this week, it's the Dolphins, Mark. Really interesting game. I think, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, fans were overall very...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.
I think confident, to maybe cocky about the AFC East this year. Miami has made it interesting, and the Bills are down guys in the secondary. They've been very fortunate with injuries overall these few years, but this week they'll certainly be tested. Are you taking Miami off of that comeback win in Baltimore seriously? Just what kind of a challenge is this for the Bills for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking Miami seriously in terms of the overall AFC picture. But I'm not ready to say, oh, yeah, they pose a severe, severe threat to the Bills in the East. I'm not ready to go there yet. I think what we saw Sunday against Baltimore, yes, Tua is starting to show you that, okay, we needed to see development from him. And similar to sort of the discussion with Josh Allen, maybe we're seeing that with Tua because last year it was very RPO heavy. Now you're seeing signs of him doing some of what we were just talking about with Josh Allen, moving safeties and corners with his eyes, working through reads. It's not just the whole offense is built out of the RPO structure. There's more to it. He's pushing the ball downfield. He's attacking between the numbers. So we're starting to see some of that develop with him, but we also saw some coverage breakdowns in Baltimore. We saw some mistakes that let Miami get back into that game. And so I think overall AFC pitcher, AFC playoff pitcher, wild card, Miami certainly a team you have to take seriously. But until I see them win a game like this, I'm not quite ready to say, yeah, Miami is a severe, severe threat to the Buffalo Bills and the AFC East.
You mentioned a lot of different coverages, you know, how to handle Allen. Cover zero is something Miami has tried often against Allen, and they've gotten kind of scorched doing it. That doesn't seem advisable, but like if that's their personnel, that's their scheme, like do you think they'll do more of that, or do you think maybe they'll try to change it up?
I mean, I think you have to try to change it up. You have to, you know, with the way that Allen is playing, with the way that Ken Dorsey is calling the offense right now, you have to try to change it up. I mean, take week 8 last year, for example, because I rewatched that game this week, and I think it was 13 times where Miami used that sort of zero pressure look, that cover zero, bring the house, play straight man across the board behind it. And early in that game, they got some free runners at Allen. They forced a couple of throwaways. They had one on a fourth down right before halftime where the Bills went for it. They got the free runner at Allen and just had to turf it and give up. You know, he didn't have a chance to make a play. But then late in the game, it was a one-score game. Bills are driving. They went to it again in a sort of a red zone situation. Allen had enough time, stood tall, hit Diggs on an in-breaking route with no safety help in the middle of the field, touchdown, game over. The problem with doing that zero blitz look against Josh Allen, is that you ask your defense to be perfect on 17, 18, 20 plays a game, to be absolutely perfect with no room for error. And sometimes against a quarterback like Josh Allen and an offense like this Buffalo offense, it just takes one play. It just takes one play to give up the touchdown like they did in week 8 last year. I remember years ago watching a game, Rod Gilmore was on the color call for ESPN. He said something, when you go zero blitz and you don't get home, that other team's band is going to play. That's the problem. Ask your defense to be perfect. And on that one play late in week 8, they weren't. And the Bills band started to play.
That's a good line. Cincinnati, if we can get off this game, and I'm not sure it's a good idea. I'm thinking of this sort of along these same lines here in this conversation. There's a good piece by Ben Solak at The Ringer today about the Bengals' problems in the first 2 weeks and how they can't fool anybody, Mark. Like their problem now is Burrow is under center on their running plays, and it's kind of obvious. So on those plays, you see one safety deep, and then when he backs up in the shotgun, teams play two safeties deep, and the Bengals don't seem to have a counter move here. What are you seeing there? I mean, they only played close games in the playoffs, too. I didn't see them as a juggernaut exactly, but they are 0-2 against Trubisky and Cooper Rush.
Yeah, and you know, Ben's piece is brilliant. Brent's a fantastic analyst. It's a lot in line with, you know, a similar piece that I wrote earlier where they're a very predictable offense right now. If he's under center, they're going to run the ball. I think they only had, I think, three passing plays under center in week one, maybe six in week two. I mean, once Burrow gets into the shotgun, you know they're putting the ball in the air. They don't really have a shotgun run game right now. They don't have a lot of an under-center drop-back pass game right now. And as Ben pointed out, they basically flipped the script on themselves. You know, when you want to run the ball, you want to get that too high look. You've got to find a way to get defenses into that via personnel, via formation, alignment, something. But when you've become so predictable because of your formational tendencies, that makes it a problem. And so they have to figure that out. They also have to figure out some protection issues. And part of it this past week against Dallas, Micah Parsons is a fantastic player. But then you look back at week one, there were also some stunts, some things that they weren't picking up. They tried to rebuild that offensive line, but it hasn't quite gelled yet. That's put a lot on Burrow to sort of figure it out post-snap. And he's not comfortable doing that right now. He's missing some opportunities on throws. Even when they get too high, he's making some mistakes against too high. Even when they have some coverage concept, some route concepts, excuse me, that are designed to beat cover two, he's not hitting them. So they got to figure things out. And 0-2 in the AFC right now, when you look around that larger AFC playoff picture, not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. When you set out to do that work on the Bengals, did it kind of blow your mind that the tendency was so obvious? It's kind of blowing my mind hearing that you
Ben Solak,
thank you, found the same tell. It just, what do you mean they don't have a shotgun run game? It's the NFL in 2022. What the hell's going on over there?
No, it's guys, it's kind of a continuation of things that people were talking about even during the playoffs last year, which is their response to pressure looks, their response to whether it's a cover zero look, for example, or any sort of problems that they were facing was, we're going to go shotgun, we're going to go empty, and Joe Burrow is going to figure it out. And so people a lot smarter than me, like Ben, like Nate Tice, like Seth Galina, Deontay Lee, other people that are watching film as much as I am, they've been saying for a while, look, it's basically Joe Burrow, his mind and his guts are our plan B. Teams have figured that out, and now it's on Zach Taylor and this offensive staff to figure out, all right, we've got to find ways to break our own tendencies at this point, because if we don't, we're going to be in trouble.
How about Denver, Mark?
It's a similar situation. It's a very similar situation in the sense that Denver's offense is a continuation of the Russell Wilson offense we've been seeing in Seattle for years, which is everything to the numbers and outside. Everything to the numbers and outside. You watch Russell Wilson right now, you watch him during his time in Seattle, throws over the middle, throws that have to be layered over the middle. It's not where he's comfortable throwing the ball. You watch that game against Houston, you know, J.Q. O'Sullivan, a former NFL quarterback, does great video work breaking down stuff, and he highlighted a number of different plays where you've got guys wide open in the end zone over the middle, and he's not seeing them, he's not throwing it to them. When you as an NFL defense can just say, we don't have to worry about the middle, we just got to constrict everything and take away everything that's on the outside, you're in a very good place as a defense. That's the trouble that the Broncos have right now. They have to figure out how to at least get teams to worry about the middle of the field, because if they don't, teams can just take away the stuff on the outside and force Russell Wilson to throw where he's not comfortable throwing.
And they also just have more, I guess I want to say, mechanical problems than I've ever seen an NFL team. They can't, right. I mean, what?
Delay games, you got the crowd counting down the play clock. And obviously the way that week one game ended, where you're running time off the clock and you decide at that point, our best shot is a 64-yard field goal on the road on the final play of the game. It's not a good place to be right now. They've got to figure some stuff out too.
Mark, always a pleasure. Thank you for your insight, your willingness to talk Yacht Rock with me. But I always force it into these conversations right away, and it's predictable, but you make it fun.
It is fun, and it's not quite as predictable as that Bengals offense. Let's put it that way, guys.
That's good to know.
With you, as always.
Take some solace in that. Thanks, Mark. At Mark Schofield, SB Nation. Cleveland last night getting the win over Pittsburgh. Cleveland, the number 10 team in our power rankings. Pittsburgh, number 9. Tune in Tuesday at 3, all times Eastern, to see how things might get shuffled after week 3. And probably a lot will, because like we have the Colts last, Miami third. You know, if if Miami wins. If Miami wins, Bulldog, is there a change at the top? Well, I guess it's not a question for right now.
There could be. I don't know that I'd be ready, sort of in keeping with how we sounded or I sounded in the first hour of the show today. I don't know that I'd be ready to put them ahead of the Bills, if that doesn't sound absurd, if they beat the Bills. It might depend on how the Chiefs look and if they win.
Okay.
For me. But there could be. I think it's on the table. A big Chiefs win in Indy coupled with any kind of Bills loss, we could have a change at the top.
Chiefs at Indianapolis, 2 versus 16 by the power rankings. It's probably not that big a gap. Last night's game, 29-17 with that late touchdown. They don't kick the extra point on those anymore. 29-17, not the first game ever with that score, not surprisingly. But the Bills have never played a game that ended 29-17. They have played a game.
Until Sunday, sorry.
Maybe they will. Yeah. They have played a game that ended 29-18. A more unusual score. But, yes, 1965 over Houston. They beat Houston 29-18. Bills went.
And Houston is still not over it.
Yeah. The franchise moved.
Yep.
The Bills went 5-for-24 passing that day.
Is that good?
It wasn't even good in 1965.
In that era? No? Okay.
Same day was Gale Sayers' 6-touchdown game for the Bears. In the NFL, different league. Same day. One Super Bowl finished 29-17. Can you name it?
No. What sort of research did you do to find out this Gale Sayers thing was on the same day as, like, where did you
You want to know?
Where's the portal that gave you this information?
I started at Scoregami. I'm just fooling around there, and I found 29-18. There's a Bills game, one of two in history with that score. Then it takes you right to Pro Football Reference, where it lists all the finals from that weekend, and I saw 61-20.
Oh, what happened in that game?
And Gale Sayers'
6 touchdowns.
Okay. Famous 6-touchdown game. It was a happy accident.
That's not that convoluted, really. That was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it was quick. I was able to get it in. One Super Bowl ended 29-17.
I don't know.
Colts-Bears.
Okay.
Sal Capaccio next on our Dunn Tire Roundtable here on WGR. Welcome, everybody. Dunn Tire Roundtable, 4:30 kickoff here on WGR. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog joined by our very own Sal Capaccio via the West Her Hotline. Sal, I put it this way earlier. Like, Monday night, the Bills could do no wrong. Just an absolute work of art against Tennessee. And it's another week of, can anybody beat them? And in lots of places, probably still sounds like that today. Nothing has changed. You know, when there hasn't been another game or anything, but here are the Dolphins off their win in Baltimore making some noise, and now you have a secondary with the Bills that's in pretty rough shape. I don't know. It feels different than I guess I thought it would have certainly a week ago.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a lengthy injury report, and you know, going into like a week ago, we think about before the Dolphins game. Then they go out there, they throw 6 touchdown passes. We see what their explosiveness can do. You know, I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting challenge for sure. And I think as the week's gone on, we've kind of been monitoring all this. And I've seen it all day on my social media. Lots of Bills fans are, you know, pretty concerned about what's going on.
Yeah, you know what? If I, you know, this game, sure. You know, I'm concerned with them being depleted like they are. I'm still kind of thinking about what we talked about yesterday with Hyde. Like, I'm concerned longer term about him. And until we have some clarity on that, I'm it's always kind of gnawing at the back of my mind. Like, what is happening there? Second opinion, like, that sounds a little scary.
For sure. I asked Sean McDermott this morning. He was on the Extra Point show with Joe and I. And I said, is there anything, you know, at this point concerning as far as anything long term with any of these guys? And I said, including Dane or Micah, and he said he didn't want to get into that. So, you know, read into that what you want. I mean, granted, he doesn't usually get into that anyway. But I agree with you that, you know, anytime you're talking about a neck injury, A, that's already concerning. B, Micah Hyde has had neck injuries before. So, you know, that's something concerning. And he hasn't practiced all week, whereas Dane Jackson has. Well, I shouldn't say.
He's been there.
Dane Jackson hasn't practiced, but Dane has been outside watching with his position group. Micah has not. Then you have the report that came from Mark Gaughan of the Buffalo News that said he was seeking outside consultation and a second opinion, essentially. A lot of that is concerning. So until we have more clarity and know, maybe the team doesn't know yet. You know, so, well, but I agree with you. I think that that's something that we have to at least keep in the back of our heads, that maybe this is something a little bit more serious or long-term as we go on.
I'll couple that with this next area of concern. Like, Poyer is questionable, and we'll see. You know, there's dueling agendas here. We need him because Hyde's out, so hopefully you can get on the field even if you're not 100%. Then there's, you know, the big picture. You know, you want to be healthy long-term here, so maybe take it easy with Poyer. And then just Poyer as an individual, like, I gotta wonder, like, how much he would be thinking about, if at all, going out there slightly damaged and doing more damage considering his contract situation. Like, that could get complicated emotionally for him.
It could. I would tell you that I think that Jordan Poyer would not care about that. I mean, I think he'd care. I don't think it would let him get in the way of him playing football. I think it's the exact same thing to me as when we talked about this going back to training camp and people thinking that, you know, maybe he would hold out or he would just be a hold in or, you know, and it's always been the same. And you guys know, I said at the time, I would very seriously highly doubt that he would do something like that. This is a guy that really, really wants to be out there at all times with his teammates, respects his stance on this team, being a team captain, what they're trying to achieve together. And sure, in the back of your head. And then he gets hurt, right? And you think, okay, what's that look like? But to me, that is not a concern. I don't think Jordan Poyer would even be thinking about that. But certainly, I mean, it's logical to make that connection, right? But I don't think that if Jordan Poyer can play, I think Jordan Poyer is going to play. And I think Jordan Poyer would do everything he can to play. I would also tell you, Jordan Poyer actually lives in the offseason in South Florida. I think he'd love to play in this game, and if anything, you know, is bothering him, I think he'll try like heck to fight through it to make sure he plays.
Sal, I'm sort of embarrassed to admit that I don't know this. Would injured players go on the trip? I know some do, but there are times when they don't, like if they're out for the year or something like that. I wonder if it would be a sign of anything if Hyde were to not go on this trip. I'm really just asking.
It all depends, Mike, and what it would depend on are a lot of probably different circumstances from player to player. Tre'Davious White was in Los Angeles. He was on the sidelines against the Rams. You know, he's on the PUP list, and we all know he's going through his rehab. So, absolutely, players do travel. Sometimes they don't. It might depend on the severity of the injury, what the injury is. A lot of times it's like if a guy has a really bad leg or ankle or hamstring or something, a lot of times you don't want him standing on the sidelines just because you don't want to re-injure it, get rolled up. There's a weird play there. You can't run away from it in time, something like that. They do go on the trips, but I would tell you that it varies from player to player and circumstance to circumstance.
Whose call is it?
Oh, that's Sean McDermott in conjunction with the medical staff. You know, what's the risk here? What, you know, what if we bring him on the trip? You know, is there something that could happen? Do we, well, even so much as like a plane ride, right? It could be an injury that could be impacted by getting on an airplane and going, you know, 30,000 feet into the air.
Or is it good for this guy to be standing around on the sidelines for 3 hours?
100%. Or what about keeping him back in Buffalo so he can do some much-needed rehab over Saturday and Sunday at our rehab facility that, you know, obviously we have all this stuff there for him. So there's a lot of different stuff that goes in, but that's basically McDermott in consultation with the doctors and trainers and figuring out what's best for the player.
So with what we've got here, you were looking at two rookie corners on the outside, Taron Johnson. You can have Poyer in here or not for this question, Sal. What changes, if anything, about how they scheme up playing the Dolphins? Do they try to keep it simpler because they're missing the experience, or is it more of a plug-and-play, look, this is what we do, and especially the safeties have been here, they know what we do, and we're just going to do what we normally do?
Yeah, I think they're going to do what they normally do. And honestly, Bulldog, I don't know if you can get much simpler than what the Bills do. You know, I mean, they're a team that, yeah, they don't get exotic. They don't get really complicated. They don't blitz a lot. They have only blitzed a few times this entire season through two games. They play a lot of zone defense. They don't have a guy travel with another guy unless Tre'Davious White's on the field. And even then, sometimes it is, depending on who the other receiver is. I would think that they would just play their basic defense, do what they do. They have confidence in those guys to be able to, you know, do that. And also, if they want to get a little bit elaborate, if they want to do what they did against Tua last year, bring some heat, they're confident those guys, you know what they're doing in those situations, where they have to be at those particular times. So I think that, to me, the game plan probably doesn't change too much, whatever that is, and they just kind of roll into what they're doing. And it does help in the situation that they aren't a very complicated defense. It helps that, you know, they have just a very fundamentally sound scheme that they like to adhere to, which makes it a lot easier to do a little bit more plug and play.
Let's talk names, Sal. So if we, of course, no White, no Hyde, we know, no Jackson. Those are all certainties at this point. You've got Benford and Elam, the two rookies, Cam Lewis, Jaquan Johnson, you'll mention, Taron Johnson, of course, on the field. Does his role change? What do you think it looks like?
Yeah, I would say, so we don't know if Jordan Poyer is going to play, so that's an unknown, but Jaquan Johnson is generally going to be the next safety up. So expect him to start. And if Jordan Poyer can't play, then expect him and Damar Hamlin to start. So you would have both those guys back there. But I would say Jaquan Johnson would be the first man up. He would play for Micah Hyde. And even if Jordan Poyer was out, I would think that Jaquan Johnson would go in. The way that they run their defense is very interchangeable. You can play strong, free. You know, there's really no term for that. I would say that, you know, sometimes in certain situations you might want a certain guy, and he's, you know, lining up, you know, more in a box than somebody a little bit more deep in center field. But I think Jaquan Johnson would fill in for either of those guys. As far as the corners are concerned, yeah, without Dane Jackson, you're looking at most likely now Christian Benford and Kyer Elam starting. Now, behind them, I think that's where you get more tested in your depth as well. Cam Lewis has not even been active, but he can play, right? We know that. He's more of a slot guy. Now, is that where you might want to use him a little bit more on the outside? Does Saran Neal come into play here? I think that's a really interesting name this week. Does he get time on the defensive side? It's really interesting to me. They do not have a safety on the practice squad, guys. Like, they don't have a guy to elevate at that position. But let's remember what they did at the end of camp.
Lewis.
Cam Lewis played some safety. So I think Cam Lewis now becomes interesting to be able to fill in both roles and be kind of that backup guy at any of these spots. And then again, like I said, Saran Neal is also there. And of course, Taron Johnson, he is a starting nickel corner, and I would think that, you know, he'll obviously assume his normal role, but we can't forget about that particular spot.
How about Benford? I mean, sixth round pick, you're probably hoping to make the league, confident, but unsure what your status is. They draft another corner in the first round, so you're on a team that has Trey White and has that happen. And it's week one, opening night at the Rams. I mean, he's not on Cooper Kupp, but, like, what a test. And then week two, he's taking down Derrick Henry on the edge on Monday Night Football. And now it's, okay, so you're starting, and it's Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Let's go. I mean, this guy is in the league now.
Yeah, nothing fazes him. Nothing fazes him. You know, even though he came from a small school at Villanova, this is a guy that's very even keel. Cares a lot about his craft, what he's doing. And he noticed it, I'll tell you, after the game in L.A., like, we talked to him about how the difference going from playing on Saturdays at Villanova to, you know, Thursday Night Lights against the Super Bowl champions at SoFi Stadium. And he noticed it, that's for sure. And he's like, yeah, that was, you know, quite a scene kind of to be in taking in all of that. But nothing fazes him on the field. And ever since the first day he got here from day one, that's been the case. And really, that is why the Bills kind of targeted him and drafted him, and what they talked about from day one, even before we ever saw it. One of the things that has always talked about with Christian Benford from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean has been that this guy, like, that no matter what you throw at him, he's the same, and he's going to go out there and he's going to do his job, and he's never rattled and he's never bothered by the moment. And this is one of those times that, yeah, hey, go out there and cover Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Okay. So whether he can or can't, or does or doesn't, I love his demeanor. I love the fact that he's already been kind of in two big spots, primetime games, and he's started. But you're right, Mike. What a turnaround for a guy like that to go from where he was to, yes, where he is now.
What an entry into the NFL. I mean, just seriously. Yes. Well, the pass pressure will have a long way to go toward what the Bills can do in this game and whether they can make it easier or doable for the secondary against Tyreek and Tua and the Dolphins. We'll get into this some more as we continue here. Sal Capaccio joining us on the West Her Hotline. It's the Dunn Tire Roundtable. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after this on WGR. And it's time now for Rachel's Fresh Picks. Make sure you download the free Rachel's app. They'll give you your first meal free once you get signed up. Choose a location, customize your order, and have it picked up or delivered in less than 30 minutes. Also, you'll get Rachel's Rewards, where your favorite meals come with even more benefits. Whether you're in-store scanning your QR code or ordering online, rewards are built right in, so you earn points toward free food with each order. Delicious, healthy meals on the go. Rachel's Mediterranean Grills. Grill so many area locations. Fast, fresh, delicious. Remember them for catering, too, if you got a party coming up or a business meeting or something. Those are happening again. Rachel's will do a great job there, and I can tell you from experience that that's true. Rachel's Mediterranean Grill and the new Rachel's app. Fresh picks. I try to put a little bit more of a fantasy spin on these as we do our NFL picks later on. I say, and I'd love your comments, guys, if you have any, I say hang in there on Travis Etienne. James Robinson is back from an Achilles, and he looks good, and there's no reason to question him as a player in my mind. The Jaguars are not supposed to be leading in games. And when they're ahead, there's no reason to fool around throwing the ball to Etienne. You know, Robinson did the job. They shut out Indianapolis. Hang in there with him. Hang in there with Kyle Pitts because you kind of have to. I mean, you're not going to start David and Njoku over him. I mean, maybe I think.
After last night, who knows, right? This is a contract-validating game for Njoku last night.
And look at the season before last night, though. Like, guys like that, that tight end range, they do that, and then they disappear again. So everybody will start him next week. Nobody started him this week. But, you mean, you drafted Pitts early. And speaking of tight ends, real quick, George Kittle is back for this game. He's off the injury report. They play Sunday night in Denver. I like Brandon Ayuk a lot this week. He's getting targeted. Denver will have to score. Like, if they have the Seattle game San Francisco just had where they sort of run away and hide. Even in that game, Ayuk got 10 targets. There's no doghouse element anymore with him. I think he should be in your lineup, unless you have just a super team in a league with your kids. Sal, any thoughts on those guys, or maybe the game last night?
The game last night was interesting. I just, from a gambling standpoint, was super interesting at the end. Wow. All the different props that lost and won, and oh my gosh. Actually, the one thought is that game, you referenced not the particular players. I'm thinking of Justin Herbert here for the Chargers. Chase Daniel actually took first-team reps on Friday, according to Ian Rappaport today. And Herbert's listed as questionable. We know because of what you guys talked about last week with the rib injuries. This is normally like a six-week injury, right? Six-month injury. Six-month injury, not 6 week. And I don't know what his status is. I will tell you, I have already chosen. I can change it, but I've already chosen the Jags as my like death pool pick to be out for the team to lose this week. But man, if it's Chase Daniel, like I don't know. I mean, could the Jags go to LA and win?
The line moved from 7 to 3. There's an expectation here that Herbert will miss, and there's no way I'd want them in the death pool if I knew that was happening. So,
yep,
I would change it, and probably a lot of people won't because they don't know or they just will leave it. They'll still be favored. So you might you have to be right with your other game, but you might be able to find an edge.
Everybody else, a lot of people are going with the Colts to lose against the Chiefs. And I understand that. It scares me, man. I think they're going to play hard for Frank Reich. And I think they're a better team than what they've showed. That's their home opener. And it just kind of scares me off a bit. Although the logical thing would probably be to think that Kansas City's going to win.
It looks like the most obvious thing ever.
Right.
What's scary about it.
Which is scary. Right. Yeah.
Go take the Chargers to lose. Win the whole pot.
Right.
I mean,
don't think I'll be doing that.
Who would you pick if it's Daniel? We don't really know how good he is.
Know.
We just know he's rich. He's been in the league forever and made tens of millions. Hardly ever has had to play. That may change. All right. Stand by Sal and Bulldog. We'll continue on the Dunn Tire Roundtable. Dig back into Bills Dolphins after the update. Happy Friday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Adam Krautwurst next hour as well with more fantasy tips. This is WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.